The method.
Ideas. Method became
unsound.
Are my methods unsound?
Without doubt. Do you call it unsound method?
I don't see any method at all.
Hello and welcome to Unsound Methods with me, Lachlan Bloom.
And me, Jamie Batchin.
For those of you listening for the first time, this is part of a series where we talk to fellow writers about their process and technique.
Yeah, thank you for joining us again. It's been a little bit of a break. I guess summer intervened and the time just flew by. But this month's guest is the Scottish writer Ron Butlin, who we spoke to before the summer, probably before the spring. Ron is a novelist, writer in general and poet, and he also teaches music. His novels include The Sound of My Voice from 1987, Night Visits, Belonging and Ghost Moon, which have come out in the intervening years, and the short story collections The Tilting Room, Vivaldi and the Number Three and Other Impossible Stories and No More Angels.
Yeah, and we had quite a far-ranging conversation with Ron. In his corpus of works, he spans from children's fiction to sort of fairly dark sort of interior. I mean, The Sound of My Voice, I think, is quite a classic about alcoholism and sort of life disintegrating, which is quite different from the subjects he tackles in his children's books. And so we were talking about how he approaches those two different styles and also touching on his work teaching music and how that relates to finding a truth in the voice and in a piece of fiction.
Yeah, I mean, looking at those two fields of art must sort of inform each other quite a lot, I imagine. I think it was really interesting to hear Ron's opinions about that.
Mm, yeah, and since we spoke to Ron, he's I think in the last month or so started his latest novel as a Substack. So he's experimenting afresh. We didn't touch on this at the time. I don't know if he had the idea bubbling under or not, but that is ongoing at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, we'll put a link to that in the show notes for anyone who's interested to go and check it out. I mean, that's got to be an interesting format to try and write a novel in that way. So it'll be interesting to see how that progresses.
And without any further ado, we give you Ron Butlin.
Are you in the process of writing anything at the moment? Have you written anything today so far?
Yes, I just published a few weeks ago a new novel for adults, a standalone novel that was wasn't really a sequel to The Sound of My Voice, but it involved the same character, and the surprising thing that I found, it's quite dark, as you can imagine, but when the reviewers got it, they were saying, gosh, it's rich in comedy. And so I must say, I needed the comedy to get through the darkness, as it were. When that was all finished and came out and everything, I thought, gosh, I can't go back to another dark, no matter how much comedy. So I decided to do what I've done before, which is work on a kid's book. I've published several kids' books, two in verse for very young kids, and another was a young adventure, as it's called, a young adult for like 10 to 14s. And so I've spent the morning just now having adventures with kids that take on a gang of people smugglers. So it's all very topical, but it zips along, and I'll tell you, what a relief after 2.5 years of darkness with bright occasional moments of comedy.
That's quite a contrast. Do you have any sort of period of a pause in between, or is it straight from one to the other? Or?
No, there was a bit of pause due to all kinds of problems. The book actually didn't end up in the printers or finished with me until, God, it must have been about end of July. Even we were speaking on the phone while I was just about to send it to the printers, still changing things. Not because of me, it was just a whole kerfuffle that was involved. So I had a few weeks. But then one thing I also do is I teach, not much, one afternoon a week at Edinburgh University doing music appreciation. And I was doing this, well, I would be starting, it said, in September, a course on the concerto, right? Which was great, and I was really looking forward to it. And then I thought, oh, I'll just check this. This was just after I had the book launch and everything. I'll just check up that that's all, everything's going ahead. So I checked up and suddenly found I was teaching for 10 weeks instead of 6. And I thought, oh my God, you know? So I had to frantically, there was no chance of doing anything, even if writing any other work, starting something new, unless, until I got another 4 or an expanded 6 lessons to 10. And so September was taken up by doing that. So now I'm started on the kids' book. Sorry, that was a long answer to a short question. But,
no, that's all this sort of context that's very interesting, I think, to what we talk about. I mean, is the approach when you're planning an adult book different to a children's book?
Yes. Well, what they have in common is that there isn't any planning. I just go where it takes me. And I write as much as I can. I, as you can probably guess from the kind of pre-recording that we faff around that we had with various computers and things, I'm not particularly computer literate, though I am in some level. And I write by hand, even the novels. And so basically, I just start and I just think, right, where are we going? And I find that usually once I get started, particularly with the kids ones, man, they take on a life of their own very quickly, and it's a real rattling adventure. Whereas with the other novels, the adult ones, I write as much as I can, but I write it in rather a strange way. Whereas the children ones follow a straight narrative right the way through, with the in the writing as well as it usually in the finished product. With the novel, it's very different. I write just maybe a page and a half of something that just occurs to me, and then the next day I get up to work, I find something else has occurred to me that's got nothing whatsoever to do with what I did the day previously. So I write that, which might be another couple of pages, and then when that's finished, I go as far as I can that day. I'll then start the next day, and I don't know, and sure enough, there's another completely different bit. And what I hope, this is the hope, is that somehow, in some magical way, it will all come together. And I usually end up with about, say 50, 60 little sections that are all, I lay them out on the floor. And once there's nothing more coming, I then, you know, get down on my knees, as it were, literally, and look at them and see how they might possibly fit together and what on earth connection there can possibly be. And it's a wee bit like having a whole, you'd emptied out the jigsaw all over the floor, and but there's no picture to tell you what you're doing. And so I'm trying to fit them together, and then gradually, because I fit some of them together wrongly, but I see possible connections, and all these things start firing off, these pieces start firing off each other, and I'm, they kind of hopefully go through my imaginative process on the way, and gradually it begins to come more and more together, and I start adding more, cutting more. I mean, some of the 50, let's call it 50, I've never counted them, but some of them just get binned. They've just got nothing to do with this. I don't know where they came from, and that's not going anywhere. But the others have an energy, or they feel that I feel an energy from them, and they begin to kind of link up, and then gradually it begins to emerge. It's not a method I would recommend to anyone, but it seems to work for me, and it's the way that I've now done half a dozen novels, I think, and it's the way that seems to work for me. So that's
it's an interesting, but I guess on a one question on a practical level, first of all, I guess you're writing on loose sheets of paper. So they're, are they all, you've just got a stack of paper and you write per day on it. And then they're all the same. You're not sort of writing on lined paper for characters.
It's lined paper.
It's all the same. You're not categorizing. You don't sort of one day I'm going to write a sort of character piece. The next day I'm going to write a bit of.
No, I don't separate the character and the plot and the description or anything. It just all kind of comes as an undigested mass when it comes, and then gradually it begins to connect.
How much of an image do you have of the novel when you start? You know, you day one, sit down to write. Have you got a kernel of what's going on, or is it just a complete blank pen hits paper?
Kind of blank. Yes, that's a good word. That describes it. But I feel that there's something churning about. And for example, just actually reminded me, in this case, I'd done a couple of days about when I'd started, and I didn't know what it was. It was a novel about a guy who was arriving at a village at midnight. I didn't know who he was or where the village was or anything. And I read it to my wife. She's also a writer, by the way. And she just said to me, "Oh, that's Morris out the sound." I said, "No, it's not." I said, "No, it's not. It's this guy, you know, and it's definitely complete him." And next morning, I was sitting there and I thought, I'll change this guy's name to Morris and see what difference that makes. Didn't actually make much difference. And then suddenly I thought, God, maybe she, after about two or three days, I thought, my God, maybe she's right. And suddenly, for a moment, I had a glimpse, not of the novel, but just that there was a novel and it would be about this character. Unfortunately, it didn't come with any kind of detailed add-ons or anything, but it just felt, it's as if I could feel the weight of it and the dimensions of it almost, but I had no idea what it was.
It's like a sort of implicit, there's a sensation, or not an image maybe, but a sense of the novel there, rather than a clear plot outline or anything.
Yes. Oh, no. Plot outline. Oh, well, if only. No. I was just aware that, yes, this could be. And, you know, it felt like something that, it's as if I was in a completely black and dark room and holding something that I didn't know what it was. But somehow I did know that this was the future novel.
Yeah, you know, got something in your hands. You just don't know
what it is. Something in my hands, and I look forward to kind of getting to know it and seeing where it was going. And then once it got started, yes, I could see. She'd been spot on, and then that helped me to get on once I realised, because certainly the Morris kind of aspects of the character began to appear quite naturally, and then on it went, and I just carried on as previously described.
Was that different from with the children's books? Do you start with more of an, like you said, this one you're writing at moments about people smugglers, do you start with like, "Oh, I'm going to write there's going to be people smugglers," and more of an idea, or is this
this one started with a boy's wakes up in the morning and he reaches down to Patty's dog. We've got a retriever, and suddenly find the dog wasn't there, and he rushes downstairs and the dog isn't there, and it's ran off during the night, and so he and two friends go off to search for the dog in the town, you know, on their bikes, and they end up actually in this weird old house or outside of it, and they see people smugglers in action. And so it goes on from there. And they, for various reasons, they have, these people smugglers have taken the dog. That's what, so the dog's absence, their search for the dog led them to there. And then they get kidnapped. And anyway, and then we go on. So I'm not going to go any further. But that's how it's going. So it tells me that, it tells me the story, if you like.
I was just going to ask that when you start on it, do you know, other than that this story involves some younger people, but do you know that that's definitely going to be for that sort of readership? Because you could write an adult novel that happens to feature some, you know, kids sort of going on japes.
Yeah.
And what do you sift out? Like, is it the complexity of the language that you would change, or the parameters that are slightly different, or is it the darkness of the themes? Or
no, it just, I get into that mode of that age that I am inside me, you know, that kind of 11, 12 year old boy. And I, as a 12 year old, my inner child, let's call it, I see what's happening. And it's just obvious. I don't bring in things with people standing around thinking about their soul and all that stuff. I just power ahead with action and reaction and plans and getting things wrong and getting things right sometimes. And just, it takes on a life of its own.
Do you know on day one when you write that first section of the boy comes to looking for his dog?
Yeah.
I mean, I imagine that could lead on, and the next day you write something about a stranger's come to the village at midnight, and that's all part of that world. Or do you know, as that day one, you know you're writing a kid's book?
Well, yes. And I know it because I just feel it. It just feels right. Mm. And I'm kind of tuning in, as it were, to it, and that's where the signal's at its strongest, and there I just follow it where it goes. And because of the nature of it, it doesn't come out in all these little jigsaw puzzle pieces. It just comes out with a surging forward narrative.
So you've got a nicely stacked pile of papers, yes. Right? Rather than
nothing over the floor is untouched. Yes, it just carries on like that.
Okay. So going back to the adult novel, I guess, once you've got all the 50 on the floor, some of them you discard, but then you've got, I don't know, say 20, 30 of them that are kind of goers that you want to move with. I imagine some of them are, you like it, but once you see the connections, it's not written in the right tense, or it's not written in the right way.
Absolutely. You just put your finger right on it. Not in the right tense, not in the right voice. I mean, this novel that I just did, and I'm sure that the adult one, and I'm pretty sure with most of the novels I've done, they usually go through a period of being first person, second person, third person, or maybe bits of them different, and they swap round.
So how do you go about rewriting? Say you've got those 20, 30, do you then try to write those into 20, 30 pages that are coherent in some way? Or
yes, I try and put them into some kind of rough order, but then very often that order will change. I'll say, oh no, this bit here belongs to the beginning, or belongs to the middle, or actually I've not written the bit where this belongs to, and I put it in a big space in the floor all by itself. And it just sort of gradually, I don't leave the paper lying around all the time going, no, I don't think that would work in the household. But you know, I've got a clearer idea of how they fit together, begin to go. And once they're getting into the right order, then I find, yes, it actually, some bits I've written in third, some bits I've written in first, some in second. I mean, I know it sounds a bit bonkers, but that is how it comes out. And then gradually, you know, I'm very fluid to it, as you can see, that I'll find that I change them. And then gradually it begins to emerge which bits should be in first and which in second. And so that this adult one that I've just finished, It's got partly in second, and a lot of it the present day in third.
The imagination is endless. There is more in the human imagination potentially than there is in the whole physical universe, because the imagination contains the whole physical universe. It is probably also worth remembering that imagination is a treacherous sucking bog that you can waste your entire life in thinking about how great it's going to be when you write your novel, when you win the lottery. It's like quicksand, and it can neutralize your entire life if you let it. This is why it is immensely important to train the will upon the imagination. Then you will be able to bring your idle dreams and fancies down into a material form.
When you're at that stage with the pieces and the different points of view, if you realize that there's something structurally missing or a change that needs to be made, would you do that within that specific drafting period? So you would go away and by freehand write the bit that you need to put in, or would that wait until the next stage when you're putting it all together in a second draft?
Oh, what about it? Yes. Good question. If it occurs to me, bang, I do it then and there, whatever it is, because otherwise you lose it, or I lose it anyway. And so I just try and gradually, in my imagination, the whole thing's building up, and I can see a bit better how they fit together. And if I see, for example, if this follows, if this piece that says part 21 is followed by 22, or is it, let's say followed by bit 30, but if I can see how I can connect them and they actually do join together, they should be together, then I would have a go at writing some kind of connect, a bit of connective tissue, if you like, between these two bits. But that might change, but it would do for the moment. It's always just how it is at the moment. And then gradually, as I say, and then it's lots of tweakings and changes. And then eventually, maybe about, three, 4 months go past. And then I reckon that I've got a kind of order. And I've got maybe about, 150 sheets or something. If we take in all the bits that I've added and joined up and bits that felt demanded to be expanded and so on in the past. And then what I do, then I put it into the computer. If only I could then just leave the computer to do it, but I don't. I put it in, and that's really good, because again, I'm being forced to do another level of editing as I do it. I'll be changing bits and then I'll play around it for a short time in the computer, just maybe because it's good to be able to, it's easier for moving pieces about. And then I print the whole thing out. And then I would sit, I don't really work at a desk very often, apart from just when I'm doing that, when I'm putting it into the computer. I would then just sit in an armchair and with a paper on my knee and work my way through it. I put it in a loose leaf folder and just gradually work through it again and again and again and again. And once it gets too difficult to read all the scorings out and bubbles and little arrows and moved a different page and so on, then I would go up back to the computer, taking the text that's already in the computer, and then I would be adding and making all the changes, etc., that I've done, and then I'd print it out again, and then go back to the art. You see why I would never recommend it. it's incredibly laborious, but it seems to work for me. So that's as much as one can hope for.
I mean, I think it's quite a not an uncommon way of doing things, though, that the idea is that you have to keep running it through your brain, particularly the idea of making yourself write it into the computer again, whether that's originally written in freehand or in longhand, or if it's something you've printed out. I think that's a very important stage. And yeah, that the kind of annotating and just going over it is,
yeah,
we've heard lots of people who work like that. In fact, I don't think we've ever spoken to anyone, as far as I know, who writes on a computer and then just edits that document. There seems to be a need to kind of consciously move one iteration to another.
There is some, it's like a sort of translation. I mean, not from language to language, but I don't know, I find it to get it to the next stage, you need to, it's going to be translated in some way from like paper to computer or from one document to another somehow.
That's really interesting. I don't do so much now, but I used to do quite a lot of journalism. Reviews, but also think pieces, as we call them, you know, about politics or arts or something like that. And I found that these I could write on the computer directly. And I thought about it, and I thought, well, maybe I should try and, you know, write the next fiction on the computer. I couldn't do it. And I reckoned that. But because I didn't use my imagination in quite the same way when I was doing think pieces or the reviews, I just couldn't really think. I couldn't really use my imagination on the computer. Somehow it just didn't work for me. I couldn't do it, which was, a real... I thought, my God, if only I could. But I just couldn't. And so, that immediately it's fiction, bang, there I am, back with the sheets of paper again.
Yeah, whatever works is the main thing.
Yeah. I mean, my wife, so I just say, when my wife, and she works, you see, she works only on the computer. And recently she switched from doing fiction, actually, to doing quite a lot of poetry. And she does that, and I couldn't imagine doing that on the computer. But it works for her.
Yeah, I can't. Somehow poetry, yeah, I don't know. There's something about writing, composing poetry on a computer I feel unsure about. But that's interesting.
Yeah. Cummings would have done it. I think E.E. Cummings probably did it for some of his poems, but that's about the only kind of that kind of concrete poetry thing that I could imagine.
The synonym searcher on Word or something, I could imagine you get lost in that for a very long time.
I think that was beyond me. Yes.
In that process of sort of drafting and redrafting, as might be part of your novel called Sound of My Voice, but do you read it aloud at all at any of these stages?
Do you
save that for a certain stage, or are you just, do you just read it whenever it pops to mind to read a part?
No, there's a particular point where point when I do this, and I sometimes read it aloud to myself, right? I'm used to doing that because I don't do so much now, but I used to do lots of poetry. And, the ear is always a much better critic than the eye, and you can really, you really hear everything and the voice, getting the voice and everything. But when I'm doing fiction now, one of the things that we do is, with Reggie, is that I read to her while she cooks. And normally I'm not reading my stuff at all. We're reading, novels, Graham Greene, Woodhouse, whatever, massive Dickens, we've done over 200 books now. But when I'm sometimes at a stage in a novel, then I would read to her while she's cooking, and I'd read what I'd be doing. And she loved it, particularly when I was doing the previous kids' book, because she was so caught up in attention. She's like, no, I want more. So it's really good to have this audience waiting in the evening for this hot off the pen from the morning, so that really helps. And as I said before, yeah, the ear, you know, the ear is so much better critic. And I can really hear it when I'm reading it aloud, and Reggie can hear it too. And it's very helpful in making suggestions and so on.
So would that be at the stage, once you've put it into the computer and printed it out, once it's a bit more together, you'd be reading it? Or
Kind of, yes, yes. So as I said, I read the beginning to her. And she then helped me to point me in the right direction. But then I didn't read any to her for quite a while after that. You know, I've got some sense of wanting not to give her a completely undigested or an uncooked in the slightest bit of work. So, yes, it would be, I think, probably it would have been a wee while till I began to feel a bit more sure of where I was going, and then was able to read it to her then, and then carried on working as I was doing.
Mm-hmm. Does that process of reading it aloud, are you using that when you've got the 50 sheets on the floor? Are you kind of easing? Are you reading it to decide which ones go in the bin and which don't? Or is
Probably, sometimes I'll maybe read a piece, and, you know, I'll read it into myself, as we used to say, and I'll think, well, yeah, and then I'll read a bit of it out loud and think, no, this just doesn't belong here at all. It's just not right. It's not going anywhere. So it'll be put in a kind of, for a time, it'll be in a kind of pending out tree, as it were. It's not quite got to the bin yet, but it's going in that direction. And a few get rescued from there, but others just end up not being picked up again.
Is it ever useful for sort of problem solving, the reading out loud? I mean, I feel like that might be good for something's not sitting right, like the music's not quite right here.
That's it. The rhythm, you know, I think a voice, to me, a prose does have a voice. It has a rhythm, you know, otherwise it's just dead if it's not got a pulse. And it really helps the spoken voice, because for quite a large part of my life, I was doing poetry all the time, and that's why that part of me, the kind of oral tradition almost in Scotland too, is very strong. And so it really informs how I self-criticism, yeah.
Do you tend to have multiple different projects on the go at one time, and or do you, once you get started, are you fairly sort of single-minded on that topic? Like the not come up, are you writing about alcoholism, existential angst? Is there, you know, do you get Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then Thursday you sort of sit down and end up writing a page about young kids and people smiling? You're like, oh, that doesn't fit in the top.
My goodness. Gosh, that sounds very disorganized. No, not at all. No, once I get started, I just continue, and that's it. When I was doing the journalism, of course, I was then, you know, Monday was the day that I did the journalism, so I just, whatever I had to write, I did it on the Monday, and that was it. And I learned so much from that. You know, the deadlines, word counts, all these things, cutting everything and sibling. It was such a good exercise for me. But normally I don't. The only things that I might do would be different would be, like, for example, with the music. Because I'm still trying to make up the time in this 10-week course. I'm still kind of doing a wee bit on the music every, you know, an afternoon a week or something like that.
And did you have projects sort of bubbling under then? I mean, while you're writing it, if an idea comes that's clearly not in the universe of the novel or the project you're working on, would you jot that down somewhere?
Yes, if it was something that was paid, I would. You know, I mean, I got a commission for a poem right in the middle when I was still doing the novel, and it was a really interesting commission, and it was well paid. So I took time out and did that. And then I was nearly finishing this is the adult novel I'm talking about. I was nearly finishing that. And my brother-in-law, who's Swiss, he runs a Swiss piano trio. He's a pianist, he asked if I would write something for them that an actor could do and perform with the trio. And again, I did that as well. I tried to do the two in tandem, but I just put the novel on hold because it really was, I couldn't. As my wife often points out, I can't do two things at once. So I just carried on, finished the piece for the trio, and then went back to the novel again. But that's very rare.
You'd normally then be just the one focus at a time, and
yes,
if you need to switch, you do it. But you wouldn't. I guess I was asking if you have sort of other projects at the back of your mind that you've got a folder somewhere with ideas for the next children's novel, ideas for the next.
A folder with ideas in it. My God, there's an idea. No, it's the short and long of it. No, I'm just fully concentrating on whatever it is that I'm doing.
And would you take notes at all, like, you're out in town, you're on a bus, you're at a shop, and something hits you, would you have a notebook that you'd write something down in, or you just wait until you're back?
Almost, very rarely, unless it's at the beginning of a piece. Very, very rarely would I do that. It's all to do. Somehow the act of sitting down and working is actually, I suppose, it's a work that gives me the inspiration rather than necessarily the inspiration giving me the work. Though that does happen, at the beginning, I think, at the beginning of a piece, yeah.
Have you ever pursued something like quite a long way into it and then found that your instinct to get it to an end point that satisfies you, it just doesn't quite come together in that one instant?
Yes, several times. In fact, quite a few times, as you can imagine, from the rather strange, this way of working. I suddenly found that all the pieces of paper are cul-de-sacs, and then I just stop it, and I realize it's not going to work, or I can't make it work. I just can't.
The experience of that hasn't led you to try a sort of different approach? Because I think we've spoken to people before who work on a more instinctive way, and quite a few of them have said that they tried doing that thing where they map out, they do a sort of schematic diagram of the plot, and then they're like, well, I think almost every person we've spoke to who's tried it moving into that way has then said, didn't work, but it was worth a try to see if that structure would help.
No, the only time I would do something at all like that would be once I'd more or less got a fair bit of it. Once I'd, let's say, reached the end of the novel, but then was still pretty unclear for most of the process of getting there. And then I might do something kind of not quite the same, but a bit like a timeline. And I would see, yes, gosh, it's so obvious that bit really belongs back there. Mm-hmm. And that kind of, I start to think rather than just working purely imaginatively, and that's really helpful. Yeah, but I don't do that until I'm stuck.
And at what point? Because you said your wife's a writer as well, and obviously with editors and things. At what point is it cooked enough to share it with someone else and start to get their input? Or have you got?
Well, I'm very lucky. I've got two friends that I've known most of my life, and they're both writers, and we still read each other's work and give frank criticism, and the same with Reggie. It's I read her work, she reads mine, and we're pretty encouraging, but also really critical as well. And that really helps. I think it's a bit like, going out in the middle of the desert. When they say that the reason people go around in circles is because one leg moves slightly longer than the other, so one footstep's bigger than the other, and you just end up going around in circles. But another person can actually keep you in a straight line, and I just find that so helpful. Yeah.
Do you find at that stage is that spurring you to cut more or to add more? Or, I mean, does it
depend? Whichever is, it might give me the support to just, to binge something that just really is just taking an awful lot of energy and really not going anywhere. But I keep thinking that it might. And, you know, and then, it won't. And it's obvious to anybody else. and then I would have another look at another good, hard look at it. That's what it allows me to do, yeah. But ultimately, it's my responsibility. You know, it's just like with Reggie, I'll make suggestions and she'll, just ignore some. And you know, it makes her think about others, you know. Well, it makes her think about all of them, but it's then her to decide what she wants to do, obviously.
When it resonates, if you get feedback and it resonates with something you feel is wrong or right, then it's easy to work with.
Particularly about the bits that are wrong, because you can have this suspicion that, you know, this really isn't going anywhere. But I don't want to give up on it, you know, because there's something there, or there was something there. I've just lost contact for the moment. And then it really makes me look at it rather than just keeping going. I mean, I have several novels. I mean, even novels that I've completed have gone that way and been ditched with us. After a couple of days with a sigh of relief,
do you ever go back once something is published? Is it kind of out of your consciousness in a way? Or do you sort of go back to things you've written 10, 20 years ago, and is there an itch to change them? Or
No, I don't really go back very much. But when, you know, if I'm at a festival or doing a reading somewhere, say, I do find I'm changing bits when I'm reading them, not just simply because it's an audience that, you know, has got different demands than a reader sitting in a room. Just bits, you know, I'm finding myself in the launch I did recently. And I was reading it, and as I was reading it, I was going, oh my God, what's this? And I just skipped it. And, you know, and if I had, if I'd had the chance, I would have obviously cut it. But it was only, you know, a matter of two or three words. But it suddenly stood out. It was obvious.
Related to that, because you said that your most recent novel is I don't know if sequel would be the right word, but it's related to The Sound of My Voice, a novel from, let's say, 40 years ago. Am I... In the ballpark?
Yeah, 30? Yeah, it's about 35
years ago.
Getting towards that, yeah.
Did you feel that you needed to go back and revisit the original novel to kind of, not fact check, but get the sense of integrity of it for the character? Or did you feel very happy just to do a completely new imaginative work, knowing you'd already done that work?
Well, I certainly began with the... you know, with the complete clear imaginative work, and then occasionally I felt I needed to go back to touch base, maybe touch base with a voice, touch base with a feeling, you know, because you don't always remember what you wrote all these years ago, and so even very basic things like what were the kids called, you know, that sort of thing. But in general, I would go back more to touch base and take it from there. And also just a bit, maybe read, I think I read a couple of scenes just to get me fully back into that world of an alcoholic, because I'm not an alcoholic at all. I mean, couple of glasses of wine with dinner, that's about it. But this guy's the full-blown functioning alcoholic. And so I hadn't written about that in all the work since. So I needed to get myself back in touch with that again. Mm-hmm. And so that helped. But the idea of reading the whole novel again, no, I wouldn't have.
If you try your best to talk yourself out of it, then maybe you have the hint of a vocation.
I did mention about the music, you know, and the fact that I do this kind of teaching music appreciation. And there's no doubt for me that music is a really big thing in my life. And it, in many ways, it informs the way I write. You know, and when I was doing poetry, it really did. I learned so much. You know, composers, you know, Bach, Beethoven, Mozart, they don't lie. You know, the music doesn't lie. And I think that it's once we get into words, you know, the danger is that we're starting to stray from the truth sometimes. But somehow music's got an integrity within itself. And I try and keep that integrity, try to learn from that to help me to be as true as I can and not play any bum notes when I'm writing, as it were. You know, that's really quite important for me.
I really like that. The music doesn't lie. Like that's, I think I know exactly what you mean by that. It can't, it can't hide things, can it? It's
no.
It has its integrity or it doesn't.
But I think it is interesting with, I mean, I don't know, for me, like writing fiction in the first place is some sort of, like, you're already entered into the world.
Yes.
Eyes with that. But the truth that you're going for is not the truth of it being true in the sense of journalism. It's, you know, like the sound of my voice, there's a lot of, you don't know what's going on. It's not a lie exactly, but it's not trying to give a description of factual.
Yes,
so, into the real world in the same way. It's,
it's
a truth within fiction somehow. But you, as soon as you step into that world, you're in a world of lies. Somewhere, it's just how.
Yes, well, there's so much self-deception in it. You know, that's it. But the novel itself is being narrated. It's a voice that is telling the story, and this voice is. As I understand it, is coming from something that we've all got. It's the one thing in the whole universe that is on our side only. You know, you call it your conscience, call it your subconscious, or whatever, God, whatever. But it's the only thing that's on your side in the whole of the universe, totally. And this is telling this story. But the problem is that Morris doesn't listen to it, just like we all don't listen to it most of the time. And one of the ways he doesn't listen to it is by drinking. He anesthetizes himself. And so that, this voice is trying to tell him the truth, like we were saying, but he doesn't want to hear the truth. It's the last thing he wants to hear. And so that sets up the whole dynamic for the novel. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
I mean, it's very personal for this podcast, and I appreciate we don't tend to focus on books, but I did find it sort of interesting that you said that you're not a heavy drinker, or you know, your relationship may have changed over time, because I think that's felt an incredibly honest portrayal of the level of self-deception that goes along with that, the disintegration that happens around it. I was thinking I sort of feel that The Sound of My Voice and Under the Volcano are the sort of two very sort of alcoholic novels that are not that it's a sort of plot point or it's a way of showing a character who's a little bit disorganized. It's kind of they're not facing up to the central thing that is pulling their lives apart, you know. So I feel that that's I don't know if you the research that was involved or people you know that helped to reflect on that, but I did feel it felt a very honest and accurate way of summarizing that
way of living. Thank you very much. It was also when I was younger, I'd be like, you know, I'd go out and have 8 pints or something. My goodness, I couldn't imagine doing that now, but doing that then. Yes, I can remember nights that I had and so on, but that's different from an alcoholic. I was I'd be at that age, what I was doing was drinking just to get really high and then really enjoy things. But an alcoholic drinks to feel normal. And that's the big difference, I think. Mm-hmm. And I had a friend of mine who mercifully now he's got through it all, but he was a bit like that, and he read the book and he just said, "Wow, that is spot on." And yeah. I just, my God, this is how he's felt now, John. Because I didn't take it in my own life anything remotely like that.
Thank you to Ron for joining us, and thank you for listening. You can find out more about the podcast at unsoundmethods.co.uk or at unsoundmethods on X, Twitter. I don't really go there very much anymore. I'm pretty sure it's that. I don't think there's an underscore in there. But again, we'll put this stuff in the episode notes, along with a link to Ron's Substack, as we discussed, and any other of Ron's sort of online presence.
You can find me and my writing at lachlanbloom.com, and I'm also on X, but don't really go on there, or on Medium as well, but also not on there too much recently.
You can find out about me and my writing at jamiebatchin.com or on Twitter, X, which I don't go on to very much, at Jamie Batchin, and on Instagram at Jamie_Batchin. Thanks again to Ron for his time. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.